Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
All right, it is Thursday's football show. We've had a few technical difficulties, but John Giles is back on the line. You there, John?
I'm here, Nathan.
Let's give it a go and see how far we get this time.
Okay.
Have you been keeping over the last week? Obviously a difficult week.
Well, it's not too bad. You can go out for a walk here, Nathan, you know. And I'm quite honest, I'm not doing much more or less than I normally do.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Just got to be obviously very, very careful, especially at my age, Nathan, you know.
Yeah. Obviously, last week, since we last spoke on a Thursday night, the terribly sad news of Norman Hunter, and you were on Friday with Jer, and you paid a wonderful, warm tribute to him that I know a lot of people loved listening to. And the news we hear today is that Leeds United are going to name their new South Stand after Norman Hunter, which seems very much like a fitting tribute.
Oh, definitely. You know, you couldn't pay a too high a tribute to Norman. We talked about him last week, Nathan. He was just a really good lad, you know, a nice, nice person, and very modest, never got carried away with himself. He actually loved playing, you know, he loved playing, and he never lost the runners themselves, as we say, at home. Nathan. He's just a decent individual who was also a great player.
That was something that really stood out through all the obituaries that I was reading over the weekend, just how modest an individual he was and just how much he loved the game. And a lot of the headlines were of Norman Bite Your Legs Hunter. And for the younger generation, there was Bite Your Legs Hunter and there was Chopper Harris. And we probably didn't see a huge amount of the matches, so all you thought of was these incredibly tough, strong, tackling players who played on the edge type players. How did that sit with him, that nickname, as he went on through his life?
Well, it wasn't quite as it was. I think it was the 68 or 72 Cup final. It was a Leeds United supporter who had this particular thing, big banner, Norman Hunter, Bite Your Legs. It wasn't, and the press picked it up in a certain way, Nathan. You know, we weren't the most popular guys in the world with the press. And they put a spin on it that, you know, Norman's Bite Your Legs, which is, you know, he's a really, really hard, not just hard player, but a dirty player. But this was an affectionate thing by the Leeds United support, some of the Leeds United supporters at that particular stage. But it was taken up the wrong way. Of course, he could get stuck in, and he got stuck in well in all the matches. But he could play as well, Norman, really, really good player, Nathan, and he never really got the credit for that, because they had this thing on Norman Hunter, Bite Your Legs, you know, and that was it. But it was an affectionate thing from the Leeds supporters. The Leeds supporters loved him, Nathan. I mean, who wouldn't, you know, the way he played week in and week out. He just had the same attitude every week. He just loved it. And he loved the competition and getting stuck in.
That love that the Leeds supporters have for him and have had for him, one of the real, the sadness of death at this time is that it's not celebrated in the way it once was, and funerals, and what Norman Hunter should have had was probably his body brought through the centre of Leeds, people lining the streets and acknowledging just what he meant to the people of Leeds. And unfortunately, that won't be able to happen. And, you know, family and friends, it'll probably be, I'd imagine, a very small funeral, that all those people who would love to be there to show their respect aren't going to be able to be there, which is just another side of this that's just so tragic.
Oh, it's terrible, Nathan. But I think what we'll do, I was talking to Eddie Gray about it the other day, and this is the players, that at some stage when this particular thing goes away, that we will have a night out in Leeds. The wives and players and hopefully Norman's wife and family will be at it. So I think the club will put on some sort of a deal once the football gets back. But I'm talking about the players, because when you go to a club deal, they're very nice, but you don't really see much of the lads during the night. Whereas what we'll do is we'll definitely organise something, a night or a weekend in Leeds, where we can all get together.
Yeah, something a bit more private.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's good to know that his name and that Leeds are already planning on paying tribute, and that his name will be there emblazoned in that stand for many years to come. In a way, maybe appropriate that we're going to pick a all-time Chelsea 11 this evening, because that rivalry with Chelsea and Leeds United over the late 60s, early 70s was one of the real standouts of English football at the time. Like, did you see Chelsea as your main rivals, as the main rivalry during that period?
Not particularly, Nathan. They were a very good team, but they never really... They won the Cup, and then they beat us in 1970 for the Cup, and then they won the Cup winners the following year. Mm. But they never really challenged for the league.
Why?
You know, they never won the league in my time. They were a very good team, but, you know, I think that they used to have a go at us. We were supposed to be the goody-goody boys, where they were the London boys. You know, I think the implication, well, we take it too serious, you know, which was a lot of nonsense. But they didn't challenge for the league, funny, because the league is week in and week out, and the challenge for the Cups, they were a very, very good team, as you know, Nathan. But they didn't, and you know, in our time, it was Liverpool would be the challengers, but there's six different teams won it at different times: Derby, Liverpool, Manchester City. Spurs weren't in it really, but Chelsea weren't really in it for the week in, week out stuff in the league.
So were ye the tough Northerners and they were seen as the flash London boys?
Sometimes it was the opposite way with them. They saw us as the being the goody-goody boys.
Right.
And also they were going to, well, most teams, that's the way they were going to teach us a lesson. You know, they had players that could get stuck in. There's no like Eddie McCready, Chopper Harris, Peter Osgood, who was a good player. That's the way it was, but that's the way it was with most clubs in those days, Nathan, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was looking back earlier today at some of the match reports, because probably the rivalry was built on the FA Cup. As you say, they never really challenged for a league title, but there was a huge amount of clashes in the FA Cup over a 4 or 5 year period, culminating in that 1970, that infamous 1970 final. And in a lot of the match reports, Chelsea won the game, but by all accounts, Leeds were by far the better side. But somehow, Chelsea had a way of getting a result that maybe a lot of teams weren't able to do against Leeds at that period. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, no, we were very seldom beaten. Mm. But, you know, unfortunately, I have to say, you know, the late Gary Sprague, you know, really let us down on the day. We outplayed them totally. We were winning 1-0, well in charge of the game. Pitch was in terrible condition. It was just after some thing they had at Wembley. It was like a mud heap. We were winning 1-0, and... Chelsea left. I was quite near, about 30 yards out. And, you know, when that happens, they go on, have a shot. And he didn't hit it particularly well. And Gary, he went for it. He was going to dive for it. He was going to pick it up with his foot, take it with his foot. He got in six different minds and finished up diving and let it go into his body. And that's, you know, when you're playing in a big match like that, Nathan, against a tough team, you know, you can't give anything away. Not in just in our day, but any day. I mean, you saw that with Liverpool before they sorted out the goalkeeping situation. And we went to extra time in the match, you know. But we should have outplayed Chelsea on the day, but we gave too much away.
And was it a different level of physicality in those games against Chelsea, or was that just the norm at the time?
It was the norm in most matches, except they had players who could dish it out. Just as well as we could. We had Chopper Harris didn't get named a Chopper for no reason. He was a good player. He was good at it. And Eddie McCready was deadly at left back. You know, Peter Osgood couldn't handle himself. The John Hollands could get stuck in. So Chopper was good at it, Nathan. You know, like if you call it, I'm not trying to give great credit for it. But he very seldom got booked or very seldom got sent off. He was very clever the way he did it and deadly. Like, the hard men in those days was Chopper Harris, Tommy Smith, Norman, Nobby Styles. But I think Chopper would have been the most dangerous of them.
Right.
Cleverly doing. Like, when you played against Tommy Smith, and Tommy Smith would knock you up in the air. But you'd be expecting that, you know? And it wouldn't really hurt you. It looked worse than it actually was. And Norman would be similar like that. But Chopper, if he was going to get you, he was going to get you with a good one.
Yeah.
Eddie McCready was wild.
Right.
You know? I played against Eddie McCready in 1965. Actually, I was playing on the right wing. And you might see it on the telly sometime, but I was on the ball on the right side, and I passed it. Norman Hunter had come up from the back. And I saw Norman Hunter getting the shot in when Eddie McCready tackled me. more than tackle me, just did me.
Just totally off the ball.
I don't think he was even booked. And I was carried off. I had knee ligaments. I was out for about 6 weeks with knee ligaments.
Right, wow.
Nathan. And I don't think he got a booking.
And was
like,
it...
McCready was a terrific player, you know. He was a wild lad, but he was a terrific player, Nathan. And, like, when we played Chelsea, it was always, most teams, but Chelsea particularly, there was a bit of a kicker match. And, like, what you had to do, well, in my opinion, what I was told to do in my career, when you're having a go at somebody, take your time, don't be impatient, wait. And then that was in 1965. And in 72, we played him. And the ball was running out of play, and Eddie was playing him. And this was something that you dream about. We want to get your own back on somebody, which I did. I caught him. I mean, I'm not bragging about it, but I caught him. And we were walking at half time, and he said, What the effing hell is that all about? I said, that's what do me at Stamford Bridge. He said, that's 7 years ago. I said, so what? Oh, what, Eddie? You know. You have to be. That's be an extra patient, Nathan. You know.
Yeah, you don't forget clearly, John. And I don't know how much you can go back to the exact moment. Like, so when, as you say, sometimes the opportunity just presents itself.
No, well, you have to be patient.
Yeah.
You know, like if you come off the loser, if somebody has a go at you and you lose your head, you're going to be booked. You're going to be sent off. You know. So you just have to pretend, well, that happened, no bother, and that was it. I don't want to be really talking that way. There's more to football than that, but that's the way you have to. That's the way you had to be in those days. I mean, nowadays, there's no doubt in that particular incident with Eddie, he would have been sent off today.
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt. I don't think he was even booked. It's amazing what happened in those days. That's the way it was. But Chopper would have been the cleverest at it. I say,
right.
Tommy Smith, like, Tommy would knock you up in the air, but you'd be expecting that. But in Chopper, he caught you with a good one, you know?
Yeah, and just on the Eddie McCready situation then in 72, like, when you're talking about going to do him, like, are you going in thinking, I want to badly injure him, or I just want to leave a mark?
No, you're going to leave a mark. You never wanted to break anybody's leg or that. No. I mean, to be fair, it could happen, and it did happen, but I'm giving you a good one, Eddie, because I remember what you did to me, you know. But I don't think any player would really want to injure anybody badly.
Mm.
But it could happen, though, just the same.
Do you think, I mean, we're going off topic slightly here, but we have a bit of time. Do you think that those games against Chelsea, that when it came to Clough taking over at Leeds and his attitude of you can win it better, you can win it without kicking people, that a lot of his thoughts on that Leeds team were based around those clashes with Chelsea?
Well, it was against his team as well. Mm. But that was, to be quite honest, Nathan, that was a lot of nonsense that he was talking about. I mean, we said we played some brilliant football. We just won the league that year. Like, we could really play. We could dish it out all right. But that wasn't how we won matches. I mean, you take Peter Lorimer, Eddie Gray, Alan Clark, Billy Bremner.
Mm.
These were great players. And of course they could dish it out, because you had to be able to dish it out in those days. But what Clough was talking about was a load of nonsense. I mean, he was coming in as a new manager to a team that had just won the league. Right?
Yeah.
And he's saying, that's not the way to win it. Well, what is the way to win it? You know, like, you have to play good football to win it. You have to get stuck in and all that. But this was Clough being Clough coming in. I mean, he'd been highly critical of Leeds for about 5 or 6 years, Nathan. Then he comes in, and on the first meeting, I'm sure you heard about it.
Mm.
You can get all of your medals, you can throw them in that effing bin over there. And this is... We were experienced players. I think I was 32 at the time. We'd been through the mill, and we just won the league for the second time, won the cup, and all the things that were there to be won. We won. We lost some as well, but we won a lot of trophies. So, and he's coming in, telling us, you know, you throw your medals in that bin over there, and us, after working hard, really hard, and dedicated lads, dedicated team, terrific players. And that's the first words he said. I think Cluffy was insecure, to be quite honest. I think he did that with other clubs when he went in. He might have gone into Derby and said, look, you lads, you're no good, you're a load of rubbish. And at that time, he was probably right.
Yeah.
But coming into our team, having been critical, I blame the directors on it, to be honest. Director, why did the directors employ him in the first place, Nathan? Mm. You know, we knew his record. He knew what he said about us. And if you were to pick somebody that was the last person that should be manager of Leeds, it was Brian Clough at the time. Now, he went on to be a great manager at Notts Forest, and good luck to him, but he never got off first base at Leeds.
Yeah. Let's talk about this Chelsea side then, this all-time 11. I'm really interested to see who you go with, because over the last few weeks, as we've gone from Liverpool, Manchester United, Tottenham, Arsenal, there's probably been a real mix of players from 60s, 70s and modern players, because all those clubs have had a lot of success in the 60s and 70s. Whereas, as you say, this Chelsea side, while they had performances in cup competitions in the 60s and 70s, they never won a title. And then you come forward to the modern age of when Mourinho arrived in and when the Abramovich money arrived in, they've had any amount of success with Premier League titles, European Cup winners. So the balance here may be slightly different, I guess, than other teams that we've picked over the last few weeks.
Yeah, well, as I said, Leeds in my day were a terrific team. But there were lots of different teams winning the trophies, but they didn't, again, I want to repeat myself, they didn't challenge for the league. And they were very good when they won the Cup. They were a very good team. But they weren't as successful as the team that when Mourinho came in and the other various managers, where they were winning, as you say, Champions League and that, Nathan. So I don't have another... there aren't a lot of players from the team that I played against in the first 11 that I have. Yeah.
All right, let's get started then.
Okay.
Goalkeeper?
Cech. Peter Cech. Is it Peter or Peter Cech?
Yeah, Peter Cech, yeah.
Peter Cech. Outstanding, I think, Nathan. Very calm, very good goalkeeper. I'd have him, because Peter Benetti, the late Peter Benetti, was a very good goalkeeper in his day. Courtois was very good as well. But I think Cech was exceptionally good. So I've got him in goal.
Yeah, Peter Benetti sadly passed away as well over the last couple of weeks from COVID-19. Such a brilliant reputation for a couple of decades at Chelsea. Was he a keeper who would have pushed Peter Cech close?
He was very good in his day. As you say, he had a long career. He played for England. I think what happened against his reputation, that Gordon Banks got injured or was ill for a match against Germany in the World Cup, and he came in, and I think he made a couple of mistakes for England were winning 2-0 and they were beaten 3-2. England were beaten 3-2 in the end. So that came against him for a long time. But he was a brilliant goalkeeper. I think he must have played about 15 years for Chelsea. No, he was a top nice lad as well, top class lad. But a very good goalkeeper. But he didn't have the presence that Cech had. You know, Cech was a big fella, dominated it. Peter was actually, in those days, quite slight for a goalkeeper. But he was one of those athletic goalkeepers, great spot shot saver. He was a terrific goalkeeper.
Cech has a lot of records in the Premier League, and he's won a huge amount of medals, and he pretty much did everything you could do when he was at Chelsea. Would he be right up there, even when you're thinking of best Premier League goalkeepers of all time?
Oh, definitely. Mm. He'd be in it. The best Premier League goalkeeper, I think, was Schmeichel, myself. But Cech would be there. Yeah. There was a few in those days, but he was certainly a top class goalkeeper. I think what spoiled him in recent times. Where we the introduction of playing out from the back didn't suit him, but I wouldn't hold that against him. I don't believe. I think it's overdone anyway. I think goalkeepers playing out from the back is overdone, and I think the main thing has been solid and saving, and that's the big thing. And he had that, but I think it did go against him in recent years.
Let's look at your back four then. We might start at right back.
Aspilicueta.
Okay,
I've got it right back. Nathan, I think he's a very, very good player. Mm. Gets on with the job. Not spectacular in any way. I have him at right back. I've got John Terry, who was, I think, one of the great defenders. Captain, great presence. One of the best defenders I've seen. Nathan, he wasn't particularly quick. He was a good distributor of the ball as well. Real leader and a real defender for Chelsea over the years. I think he was one of the main reasons for their success.
That distribution you talk about there from Terry maybe isn't something that is really focused on, because when you think of his partners at Chelsea, quite often it was seen as the other centre-half was the ball player, and that John Terry was the heart-and-the-sleeve guy. And likewise with England, maybe Rio Ferdinand was the ball player, yet John Terry was the guy who'd get stuck in, who'd throw his body on the line. Was his ability actually on the ball underestimated at times?
I think so. I think he was good, Nathan. And, you know, my take on it is, when you get, you know, John Terry, or you say Rio Ferdinand, one is the player. But let's put it this way. I'd rather have two John Terrys than two Rio Ferdinands.
Right.
Because defending is the main thing. And he could use the ball well enough. You know, he doesn't, like, defenders like that don't have to be great on the ball when they're in a good team. Now, I think I said to you last week with Norman Hunter and Don Reavy, when you win it, you give it to the players that can play. You know, and like in John Terry's case, he wouldn't give the ball away, but he had players around him that as soon as he won it, he could give it to them, they'd get on with it. But he could play. But he was one of those players that if anybody was going to charge down a shot, he'd be the one doing it, getting headers away. A real defender, Nathan. So, like it, and I think some players like Rio Ferdinand would look easier on the eye. But I would take two John Terrys than two Rio Ferdinands.
His leadership qualities as well, maybe mocked at times when people think back to the Champions League final and he arrived out in his full Chelsea kit. But in terms of a captain and being the leader of that Chelsea side under Mourinho, do you look at that side of his personality as well, like so crucial for everything they've probably achieved over the last 15 years?
Oh, definitely. I think he was the main man in the team, Nathan, for what he did. He scored a fair goal. I know it's a bonus, scoring a fair amount of goals coming up from corner kicks and free kicks and that. But he was a bit like Norman Hunter in that he gave everything he had in every match that he played. And he was you know, a really, really top defender with the right attitude, could use the ball well enough and defend well. He was a real leader. I think he was the main man in many ways for Chelsea in their successful years.
So who have you got alongside John Terry then at centre-back?
I've got Ricardo Carvalho.
Right.
I think they were a good partnership at that particular time. He was a very good player. So they suited each other. As I said, he was probably a classier player on the ball than Terry. So they did complement each other in that way.
No Chopper Harris?
No Chopper Harris. No, I'm sorry to say, in many ways.
Was it close?
Yes. Yeah, Chopper could play. Chopper was good. He had a good head on him for playing, Nathan. He wouldn't have been... He was very calm, collected in what he did. And he had this name of Chopper, which was it was well-deserved in many ways. But he could play as well, like a lot of those lads could. But... I was tempted to put him in, but like when you're picking a team like this, you can't put everybody in, Nathan. So he's not in, and I've gone for Ashley Cole at left back.
Okay, because I think we debated Ashley Cole last week on whether or not he should be in Arsenal's all-time 11. Didn't make that, but has made this, again, in terms of probably a very different player from the other full-back in Azpilicueta, had probably a bit more about him going forward.
Yeah, I would think so. I think Azpilicueta was probably a slightly better defender, but there again, Ashley Cole made it up. He's good left foot. He's prepared to go for it. I think his attitude was good. He was a good player at Arsenal, as we know, as well. But he was England in the England team, and he was really one of the top-class left-backs in the game.
Yeah, there was definitely a period of his career when he was probably arguably the best left-back in European football.
Yeah, he was thereabouts. Yeah, he was he was a top class player, and did his stuff for Chelsea.
Are we going all the way back to 1964 and Eddie McCready doing you for him not getting in the team?
No. Actually, I met Eddie McCready, as you deal with players afterwards.
Yeah,
and there'd be no problem. I would never hold anything personal. It was what it was in that day.
Yeah,
and we did what we had to do in that day. But when we meet up afterwards, I met Chopper Harris since, and Norman has met him, and they'd have a drink. You'd have a drink together, and that. We know, be no bother in that, Nathan. It was all part of the game.
was Eddie McCready of the quality that he would have been in contention for this all-time 11 in that left-back spot?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And Chopper would be as well. Mm. Chopper at right-back. I was definitely not sure what to do about it, Nathan. It's very difficult when you're picking a team like this. And those lads were, Chopper Harris and Eddie McCready were from my time.
Yeah.
Now, that's, like, in those days, every team, or nearly every team, had a Chopper Harris or an Eddie McCready. That was the name of the game in my day.
Yeah, well, it's hard to pick too many faults, I think, with that side that you've picked there of Petr Cech in goals, a back four of Cesar Azpilicueta, John Terry, Ricardo Carvalho, and Ashley Cole. So into midfield, I think you're going with a 4-3-3 this week?
4-3-3 this week, Nathan, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've gone with Frank Lampard, one of the best.
Mm.
I mean, what a player he's been for Chelsea over the years, Nathan. You know, he came from West Ham. I think West Ham let him go. He went to Chelsea and was there for years and years. What a player for Chelsea. You know, you couldn't dream of a player better than Frank Lampard. Goal scorer from midfield, Nathan.
Mm.
And his goal scoring record, I think he's the goal scoring record at the club.
Yeah, he is. 211 goals for Chelsea.
Amazing. Coming from midfield. Now, he wasn't a creative midfield player by any means, but he had enough about him not to lose the ball in the middle of the field.
Mm.
But I'd always describe Frank Lampard and Gerrard, Stevie Gerrard, as goal-scoring players coming from midfield.
Yeah.
They weren't like generals in the midfield, and they were more getting on the end of things. And there was nobody better than Frank Lampard at doing that. Down to goals. Was it over 200 goals?
Mm.
That's astonishing for a player that was playing from a midfield position.
And regularly scoring over 20 goals a season as well from midfield. It's hard to think, certainly I can't from watching football, think of a player who was so good, as you say, at making those runs from midfield, of timing his run, at arriving in the right place at the right time more often than Frank Lampard.
No, well, Gerrard would be similar to him, except he scored more spectacular goals. Mm. I think Steve Gerrard did. They were very similar in the way. That's why I think they couldn't get on playing for England, Nathan.
Yeah.
You might have mentioned this before, because, you know, in the game they say, well, they were both good at the getting on the end of things, which they were. But, you know, there has to be a beginning to get to an end. And I think when both of them played for England together, neither of them were capable of starting it to get there, to begin the situation to get to the end of it. Now, that's why I thought Paul Scholes should have been in the middle of the two of them at that particular time, but he wasn't. But that was my take on them. Between them, I think individually, playing for the different clubs, at what they did, they were fantastic. But they needed somebody to begin the move for them, for them to get at the end of it. And they didn't have that in England.
Was Lampard as well also the beneficiary of being the right player with the right manager at the right time? So he'd had a couple of good seasons with Chelsea, and then Mourinho arrives, and it seems Mourinho says, you're going to be my guy, you're going to be the player I'm going to build this team around over the next few years. And what a team that turned out to be.
Oh yeah, well, you had Terry as well. Mm. and there's nothing better, Nathan, than having a manager that has confidence in you. You know, if you have a manager who has no confidence in you, it's very hard to be a top player. And he deserved it. I mean, he deserved to get the backing of the manager. Of course, it was in Mourinho's interest, because he saw what was in him and backed him and gave him credit for what he did and applauded him. There's nothing better for a player when you have a manager like that, that can do that. And of course, they have to have the ability as well to do it. And he did in a big way.
So, Frank Lampard, I guess, was an automatic selection in this all-time Chelsea 11. Who else have you gone for in midfield?
I've gone for N'Golo Kanté.
Again, one of your favourite players from the last few years?
Yeah, he's a new boy. I don't usually pick the best player who was only there for a year or two. I think he's there for been there for two or three years. But this guy is phenomenal. I mean, he had a good time at Leicester, as we know. But I think he's a World Cup winner. He's won a league medal and a cup medal at Chelsea while he's there. And week in, week out, all the time, he's given everything he's got, Nathan. He's a great character. I love watching him. And he's a fantastic player.
Strange over the last few weeks when football was still on that even though he'd had a few injury problems, that Frank Lampard, it seemed, had found a midfield that didn't have N'Golo Kante in it.
When recently?
Before football stopped, that actually maybe Lampard didn't see Kante in the way that a lot of other people saw him.
Well, I think he was injured, Nathan.
Yeah, he'd had a few injury problems as well.
An injury. I think if he's fit, he'll put him in, definitely.
Mm.
And they've got this new kid, haven't they? Young Gilmore, is it Gilmore?
Yeah, Billy Gilmore, yeah.
Well, he's the best, he's a young lad. He's the best young lad I've seen for a long, long time. But I think he'd have Kante in the team. I think he left the other lad out, the Brazilian lad, Jorginho.
Yeah.
I think he left him out of the team there for a while. But I think we've taken his first team. I think Kante will be in. I'd be surprised if he isn't.
Yeah.
But he was carrying an injury, definitely, and he was out of the team altogether through an injury. So I'd be surprised if Frank Lampard wouldn't have him one of the first down on the team sheet.
Well, they're both in your all-time 11 midfield. Who else is in there?
I've gone for Fabregas, Cesc Fabregas.
Right. So he makes the Arsenal 11 and the Chelsea 11.
He has. He started with Arsenal, as we know, and then went to Chelsea. I don't think he really fulfilled his potential, Fabregas. He was very, very good. I think when he was at Arsenal, I thought he was marching on to be one of the best in the world. And that didn't happen. He was still very, very good. He was a very good player for Arsenal, and he was a very, very good player for Chelsea. He's a lot of ability, Nathan. He could pick a pass, as they say, get a few goals. He had the ability. I don't know. I think the drive went out of him from what I expected of him in England.
Yeah, he was obviously at a very different stage of his career when he came back to Chelsea after going to Barcelona. And so at Arsenal, he starts out at 17, 18, playing week in, week out. And then he comes to Chelsea and he wins a couple of Premier League titles. Was he a different player when he came back to Chelsea at 27, 28 from when you remember him as a kid at Arsenal?
Well, he, I don't know. I think he was different, but not in a good way, Nathan.
Right.
I think at 27, 28, like in that position, you should be at your peak, where you have the experience behind you, that you control the game. Actually, I think he played better for Arsenal when he was a young lad than he did for Chelsea, although he was still very, very good. He was still a very good player, and obviously I wouldn't be picking him in the team if I didn't think he was good. But I always felt he could have been better. I don't think he marched on to be one of the greats from the time I saw him as a young fella, where I thought he would do. But he was always very, very good.
Because
very, very good player.
When you have conversations about Premier League teams of all time, Fabregas rarely comes up in the midfield conversation because you have Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes, Keane, Vieira. Should he be in that mix? Or, as you say, he could have been in that mix, but he just didn't kick on the way he should have.
Exactly. I don't think he deserved to be in that mix with them.
Mm.
But I think the potential that he showed at Arsenal as a young fella, he didn't mature in that way, or he didn't come on in that way to fulfil the potential that he showed early on. That's why I don't want to be too cruel on him, because he was still a very, very good player. But when you look at the players that you mentioned, Ferreira, Keane, Scholes, I wouldn't put him quite as high as them.
And I know you like to give special mentions as well as you're going along for the various positions, like other midfielders who would have come into the mix for Chelsea. Even in recent times, Nemanja Matic was there, and I know you were a big fan of him. The likes of Michael Essien and Claude Makélélé. Who else would you have had in that sort of midfield mix?
Well, Makélélé was there. Matic was very good. They had a lot of very, very good players. Mata, I think, was a very good midfield player for them, Nathan, who would have been in the mix before he went to Manchester United. They had a lot of good players.
Yeah, but Dennis Wise or even Ruud Gullit when he arrived.
Yeah, Ruud Gullit. They'd gone back a long way. They had Ray Wilkins was there at one time. But Ray Wilkins left when he was a young fella as well. So they've had a lot of good players over the years. And when you're picking these teams, Nathan, I enjoy doing it. But it's terrible. I find it very difficult to leave players out.
Yeah,
who've been really, really good players. But if you're picking the team, obviously you can only pick the 11, so some have to be out. But that's the hard part of it.
That's the name of the game, John. So your front three then, who have you gone for?
I've gone for Didier Drogba.
Yeah.
I've gone for Jimmy Greaves as well. Well, you know what I think of Jimmy Greaves, and I know he was in the Spurs team, but he did score 100 goals for Chelsea before he went to Italy, Nathan.
Yeah.
Actually, I think
started out
at
Chelsea.
He's the first player to score 100 goals for two different teams. Obviously, he scored whatever he did, 300 and something at Spurs. You know, we all think mostly he's a Spurs player, but he did start. I think it was a 17-year-old, Nathan, and he played in the Chelsea team. Weren't such a good team at that time. So, like, Greaves is a genius, was a genius of a footballer. There's no doubt about that.
In his last year at Chelsea, which earned him the move to AC Milan, he scored 41 league goals in 40 appearances.
Yeah, and they weren't such a good team, Nathan. You know, Chelsea were a very ordinary team when he came into it. He was just phenomenal. Went to Italy, as we know, he scored a lot of goals there, but they didn't take to him for some reason. I think the coach was a hard nut, real hard nut. And was on his back all the time. But he kept scoring goals for them. But he obviously didn't like it. And I think his missus didn't settle down there. He was delighted to get home. I think he was a real homeboard, Jimmy. And came back. As we know what he did for Spurs. But as a player, to get the amount of goals that he did was incredible.
Well,
even when he was a young fella.
As you say, breaking into the team at 17, he scored 132 goals. In four seasons at Chelsea, from 17 to 21.
Incredible. So I'm always reluctant to pick players from both teams, Nathan, but I've done it with Fabregas as well, and I've no problem with Jimmy Greaves. I think I've got a lot of stick from Chelsea supporters. I know they'd have to be the older ones not to pick Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah. Well, I think when you look at that record...
Brilliant. He was a genius. He was a genius, Nathan, in my opinion, Jim Greaves was.
So Drogba, you've really gone for that spine of that Mourinho team of sort of 2004-2005 of Cech, Terry, Carvalho, Lampard and Drogba. And Drogba was just the finishing touch, the icing on the cake for that side.
He was brilliant. He's the only player, you know, they say he's playing up front on his own.
Mm.
He's the only player I've seen that actually played better, in my opinion, on his own.
Right. Why was that?
I don't know what it was with him. He was a big, strong fella, as we know. His control was good. But the other players seemed to get in his way. You know, he could cover the positions and that was a great thing to have because it meant you had a spare player when he was doing two jobs in one. And this is my opinion, anyway. You know, he could hold it up. He was getting goals. He was scoring with his head. He was scoring with his feet. He was a fantastic player. But he didn't need anybody up top to help him. I don't think, anyway. I saw it once or twice. A few times in his career where he had somebody up beside him and he didn't play as well.
Yeah.
He just needed that space, I think, that he could do whatever he wanted to do in that space.
I don't envy you trying to pick your final selection when you look at the likes of Gianfranco Zola, Eden Hazard, Peter Osgood, Damien Duff, Arjen Robben, the likes of Kerry Dixon, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, Bobby Tambling, who was their all-time record scorer before Frank Lampard passed him out a few years ago. There was a lot of good attacking players at this club.
Yep.
Who'd you go for?
I have gone for Eden Hazard.
Eden Hazard, right.
Yeah. The Jimmy Greaves' time, as you say, and Chopper Harris and Eddie McCready, they were very good, Nathan, but they didn't have the success that they had when Mourinho came into the club. You know, and that's why, obviously, I'm overloaded with players from that particular time rather than from my own time because the success came at that particular stage where they were winning Champions Leagues and Cup Finals and they've had an amazing record over the last, 15 years or so. So most of the players, obviously, as you say, I picked are from that particular time.
And would you look at Hazard? Obviously, in terms of trophies, he won a huge amount at Chelsea and he won the Premier League a couple of times, part of the Europa League winning team on a couple of occasions as well. Do you look at Hazard as a player who has totally fulfilled his potential?
I think so. I think he was better at Chelsea leaving than when he came. I think he was a really, really top class player and was hugely influential in recent times, Nathan. Now, I don't know how he's doing. Apparently, he's not doing so well at Real Madrid.
Yeah, he's had a lot of injuries.
Has he? So I would expect him. I think it was a good sign. And if I'd have been a Madrid manager or coach, I would definitely have signed him with what I saw of him at Chelsea, where I think he's about, was he now about 27, 28, Nathan? That he should be hitting his peak. And he looked as if he was ready to do that. And maybe the injuries have stopped him. But he was a player that could do it on his own, Nathan. You know, there's not many of them around now. But when you gave it out to him, he wasn't looking to lay it off. He wanted to take people on and scored really, really, really good goals for Chelsea. I think he was a top-class talent. And hopefully, you know, he gets over his injuries and shows that at Real Madrid.
I think this is the first week where we haven't had an Irish player in the selection. Was Damien Duff close?
Well, I have him down as a good mention, Nathan. I couldn't see him getting in front of the players that we've been talking about. You know, like Damien was a terrific player, and I loved him playing. But I found it. I mean, he had Aaron Robin there. Do you remember him? You know, he was on
either side of Drogba. They were lethal.
Lethal, you know, and. You know, Damien was a very, 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 very good player. But I couldn't honestly. I'd love putting the Irish players in, but I have to really believe that they should be in, Nathan. Damien was a lovely lad, terrific player. But I just couldn't put him in that particular team.
Well, your team is, if anyone missed it, and now you can listen back online on offtheball.com, the full Chelsea all-time 11 from John Giles. Petr Cech in goals, a back four of Cesar Azpilicueta, John Terry, Ricardo Carvalho and Ashley Cole. In midfield, it's Frank Lampard, N'Golo Kante and Cesc Fabregas. And then a front three of Jimmy Greaves, Didier Drogba and Eden Hazard. John, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Nathan.
We'll talk to you next Thursday. Mind yourself.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Nathan. Bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
All right, you're welcome back. You can watch all of John Giles' team selections that he's put together over the last 5 or 6 weeks on offtheball.com. We've had Spurs, Arsenal, Manchester United, Liverpool, and tonight's episode, Chelsea. No Gianfranco Zola. No Damien Duff. Come on. You got to squeeze Duffer in there. We're allowed to be biased. John won't be biased is the problem. He's just going to say what he thinks. Whereas I'm just throwing Duffer in there just to have the green jersey. Anyways, the full 11. I won't ruin it for you. Go and check it out on offtheball.com. Now, earlier today, John Duggan caught up with Niall Quinn. The FAI have been in talks with the National League Executive Committee on how the League of Ireland might resume play and how the FAI plans to keep the lights on. Have a listen.
So based on the statement yesterday, a number of options on the table regarding the resumption of activity, matches behind closed doors, returning in September, playing a shortened season till December, the season from September to February. Now, whatever about crowds under 5,000, I would have to question that with social distancing. Say if matches did go behind closed doors, are facilities up to scratch? Would there be testing available for the players to be engaged in a physical contact potentially in cramped dressing rooms? Would they have to go into isolation given not all of them are full time, Niall? Is this a runner really?
Yeah, you should have sat on our committee for the last week or two. Those are exactly the questions that we were asking. And all we're trying to do here is to be very diligent, you know, at this terrible time by auditing the potential outcomes that may arise, you know, so that our clubs can make, I suppose, informed decisions around the feasibility of a resumption to games we play. Like, that's it. And it's, you know, it's an exercise that we think the clubs deserve. And it includes, you know, looking for practical solutions and, I suppose it begins with the medical side of it all and how can we safely stage matches, you know, from a players, fans, officials and club workers' point of view. That's number one. And right now that's been led by our chief medical officer, Alan Byrne, with a big helping hand from UEFA's new medical committee formed to help in this regard. So that's something that, you know, it's prudent to look at, it's diligent to look at. And a pathway to a position of safety is number one. So That's one part. But then there's the actual stadium preparation for scenarios that can happen, you know, whether it's behind closed doors fully or restricted capacity. You know, our grounds must be prepared differently than they've ever been before for something like this. So, again, UEFA have a stadium committee and we're liaising with our facilities department and them, you know, trying to work out, you know, I suppose, how can we be ready for what we think is the big change coming and how public gatherings are staged right now. And then, of course, the big question after all that is cost and the financial implications of trying to do this, and what is it going to cost each club to play versus not playing, and I suppose what revenues can come in to help them get to a place where they'd make a decision that they would play games either behind closed doors or with restricted capacity. So that kind of sums up the work of the association in the last week or 10 days on this, with the NLEC as well, who are representing the clubs. And I think there's been a real goodwill amongst the clubs to find not just a short-term way forward, but also the fact that the working group have come together with the FAI involved shows that there's a unity in the air, and we're really trying to do our put our best foot forward for the clubs to be ready for all eventualities here. We think that's the right thing to do.
Well, now, we saw St. Pat's temporarily laying off their players yesterday. So what financial assistance could be at hand for League of Ireland players and clubs, bearing in mind, and as a result of issues before your time, Niall, the taxpayer did support the structuring of the FAI. Do you go back to the government? Do you go to FIFA? What do you do? What will you be asking for? Because I think there's a worry out there that income support from the state can't last forever.
Yeah, I think we're looking elsewhere. We're trying to be more creative than that. So, for instance, we have gone a long way down the line looking at a streaming option where all games can be accessed, you know, via digital paywall. And that's technically in a really good position. So that can happen if that's where we believe the clubs can go. We look at a financial audit there and find out exactly what would be required from streaming to make it feasible. And there's also now at the moment a possibility of a contribution from FIFA. So I think UEFA have been very good to us. I think the government have been very good to us. So, you know, we wouldn't refuse anything. But, you know, I think the announcement from FIFA that they were willing to contribute and, you know, they've expressed a public willingness to assist associations hit hard in the current pandemic. And we're looking at that as well, trying to put that together with a potential streaming revenue and say to clubs, this is what it all adds up to, and it's up to you now at this point where you want to go. So I think it's trying to inform the clubs of everything that's out there. We'll get to the bottom of it all pretty soon, and we want to be ready for that, so that if there's an announcement on May the 5th, that we've performed diligently in giving the clubs that informed opinion of whether they should come back or not. And we would hope by May the 5th to be able to put numbers in place there as to what revenue streams would look like from online streaming, and also, you know, what contributions could be made from FIFA.
Well, Stephen Kenny, the new national team manager, Niall, Republic of Ireland down to play Six Nations League games between September and November, the playoff against Slovakia as well. What's the feeling from UEFA about how realistic it is to fulfil the calendar in the autumn?
Well, I have to say they are in a better mood about all that than perhaps we are in as a country here in Ireland. You know, when Minister Harris announced, you know, the measures of, for instance, for the leisure industry and the pubs, etc. tonight, we all took a bit of a rattle on that. The pubs wouldn't be open till January. That was scary. And while that was going on, you know, we're speaking to UEFA, who are really pushing hard to get, you know, first of all, domestic leagues finished, and in particular the Premier divisions at each country. They really want that done to qualify for Europe next year. I know we're a little bit delayed because our season doesn't finish, you know, in the summer. Technically, on paper anyway. But, you know, the whole push for the international games to go ahead is part of a UEFA, I suppose, desire to try and get, I suppose, the games played and finances flowing again as best they can. So they're in a more, I suppose, active mood, and that this is going to happen. We're all looking for help and support, but again, we're all reliant on exactly what our government and what our medical officers acting for the government say. So we have to perform as UEFA want us to do in terms of being ready for football to go back, and that's what exactly what we're doing. But there would be pessimism in the air, and we get that, and not all countries are the same. Some countries aren't you know, performing the same way as others in terms of the lockdown and what that all means. So, look, it's almost chaotic in many ways. But I guess, you know, UEFA are really all guns ahead to try and get us to prepare that we will be playing these matches.
Yeah, that is Niall Quinn speaking to John Duggan on News Talk Breakfast earlier today. There's obviously going to be many more developments over the coming days and weeks, and as they happen, we'll bring them to you first here on Off the Ball and on offtheball.com.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.